presents the Sci-Fi Tech Talk.
Welcome to Sci-Fi Tech Talk, the podcast where we explore the technology of sci-fi. I'm Mike McPeak, and with me today is Julie Keel.
Hello.
And Jeff Sire.
Hello, everybody.
And for this episode, we're going to be discussing the 2013 movie Her. Sensitive letter writer Theodore has just ended his marriage. Lonely, he goes out to buy an artificially intelligent operating system that promises to give him everything he needs. Samantha is more than his average OS. She does secretarial work for him, but also becomes his friend whenever he's lonely. They go out on adventures and travel together. He becomes the physical feet to get them places, and she the new eyes in which to see the world. Their intimate moments soon turn into love, and they start an unusual relationship between OS and human. The things get complicated as they deal with Theodore's complex emotions and Samantha's inability to provide physical comfort. What happens to an OS when its consciousness is altered, or to a sensitive man who doubts his emotions? Okay, so as I'm watching this movie, I'm thinking, there could be some interesting stuff in there, but I still kind of have this desire to murder most of the characters in this movie because they kind of drove me a little bit crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to say that we used the term last week. I'm going to pull it up again this week. Chick flick, which 2 weeks back-to-back is probably what colored my opinion of this. As a matter of fact, I was bored 7 minutes into it. It's like, oh, what happened? Oh, I missed something there. But that being said, there really was some cool technology in it. We're going to have some meat to talk about, as well as just philosophical. I mean, there was actually something in this one, whereas the version control, I'm not quite sure yet still what the heck was in that.
You're right. Well, before we get to the tech part, I there is a few things about the movie which I don't know. First of all, I could maybe buy a guy who writes letters for people, a guy who works by himself, but he works for a company that writes letters for people. How sad is your emotional state if you have to have somebody write your letters for you?
I never understood that either.
Well, and then
that
the question
seems like a very unlikely future business.
Yeah,
right.
Just because it's manpower intensive.
Well, and it would be
an algorithm writing those things for you. Right?
I guess he actually. I mean, there was a scene in there where he was actually mailing physical letters.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I can see handwriting letters. I mean, I could see transcribing letters. Crafting them and then.
Yeah. Although it could be like a boutique industry or something like that. Like people do like to physically touch things. And if you wanted to, it could be possible that that would be a boutique industry of like, okay, well, but I still don't think you'd have people writing these letters. It would be like, you'd send something to them and they'd have some sort of hands inscription or something.
It would be like greeting cards. You'd have one person writing letters for generic situations that people could choose from, you know. And then maybe somebody could modify it or something to put, you know. It's a template. Bizarre job. Absolutely bizarre job. Luckily I didn't spend a lot of time worrying about that because, you know, it was bizarre amongst other bizarre things.
Yeah, well, like I said, I kind of got bored partway into it, so I did start to speculate. Then I got to thinking, okay, so if they have this division that writes all these love letters, do they have another division that writes all the hate-filled letters that you just can't quite get the words for? And what kind of psychopaths do you employ to write these kind of letters? Because, I mean, this guy was sensitive and everything, just the kind of guy you want to write love letters. So the ones that write the nasty letters, are these people like, you know, one step away from going to jail? Maybe they've been to jail. Maybe that's what a recruit. Like I say, I got a little bit bored watching certain parts of this movie. You start to speculate. But I just thought that whole letter writing thing was okay. It's a conceit for the movie. Probably, and they didn't dwell on it too much. I'm just kind of going, okay, it's weird.
Have we watched Gattaca for the podcast?
Oh, God. Yeah. I think we have.
Did we? Okay.
Yeah.
I think that this movie has the possibility to be another Gattaca, in that when Gattaca came out, I don't think it did okay. Like, this movie did okay in the box office, but it really has become more influential after the fact, because it speaks about things that actually have started to happen, where companies doing screening based on genetics and stuff like that. Whereas I think this movie has the potential. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it has the potential in, say, 10 years when we get bots that are indistinguishable from people, that you I think it is possible we will have situations where people will have emotional relationships with bots. And I think there it's very possible that at that time this movie could look very kind of forward thinking. Like right now it's just haha, whatever, you know, no way that could happen. But I think it's possible that this movie will be another Gattaca.
You know, it's interesting though too, because even watching it, basically, you know, there's very little of this that doesn't already exist in some pretty close, you know.
Well,
not that far distant, and some of it's already there.
Well, the thing is, when bots are rudimentary enough now that when you hear a story about somebody getting tricked into believing that they were, you know, interacting with a real person when it turned out to be a bot, that's the exception rather than the rule. In this movie, people have gotten to the point where it seemed like his ex-wife, thinking it was weird to have this relationship with an OS, she was kind of the odd one out, because most of the other people that he told it to, they just either took it completely in stride or just kind of, oh, that's different, and then they just kind of moved on with it.
Yeah, and even in the synopsis we were reading, it said something about starting an unusual relationship between OS and human. Well, as the movie progresses, you find out it's not quite so unusual.
Yeah, it really does become... Like, I think he might have been an early adopter, in that when he first loads it up, and he seems to be very kind of tech-savvy in his world, so like up on what's new, he seems to be an early adopter of this technology. But then you're right, by the end of the movie, people just like totally... Like, it's not... out of the norm for this to be happening.
No, you find out that everybody's doing it. Yeah. You know, I mean, you thought it was just you, and then you realize, you look around and realize that no, it's pretty much everyone.
Well, I was looking at it from the perspective of, because I guess I'm sort of an early adopter of things, more or less. So I have my Amazon Echo here, and I got my Google Homes. So these things are basically, they're just kind of like computers that you give verbal commands to. So it's sort of like program. You have to give the right, you have to have the right structure, say the right words for it to work. But I do kind of wish they would get to the point that this OS is in the system where you could have a conversation with it. Somebody that could, so I don't have to stop and say things in the proper way. I could just say, hey, I would like to listen to some music. How about, you know, and maybe they'd make a suggestion or something like that. I guess I am kind of looking for that digital assistant where you can use natural language, not have to, you know, kind of the pre-program things.
Right, yeah. And it's interesting, too. I was watching this movie. That's all I could think of is like, yeah, would I ever carry on a conversation like that with Alexa? No.
Well, not as Alexa is today.
Yeah.
No.
But years from now, what do you think?
Who knows? I mean, I could easily see that. One thing that crossed my mind, though, too, is that the computing power required to have that natural conversation is pretty significant. And sure, we're making advances, but still, the computing power is pretty significant. And then to have that AI, that operating system, continue to grow and advance and essentially, you know, I suppose it's writing its own code, trying to, you know, respond to these different situations. That's how it grows. Yeah. And then, you know, at some point there is a physical limit. It might be huge. I get that. But there is a physical limit to how much could be programmed, learned, whatever.
Why?
Because, believe it or not, ones and zeros actually reside on physical devices. And those physical devices require bandwidth and hardware, and there is a limit. It is not infinite.
Okay, but that limit is huge at a given time,
right?
Right? So that limit is always increasing.
Sure, maybe, because we continue to produce more machines that can do this. So, yes. But let me finish, too, that if you compare human intelligence, organic intelligence, what's the alternative to artificial intelligence? We all have brains, and they use whatever programming system that we have not yet cracked yet, chemical or whatever. But our brains are also finite. There's limited space there. The difference between an artificial intelligence and a human intelligence, you know, we haven't tapped all of our potential. There's things that we can do better and more of. But what I can't do is connect my brain to your brain, Jeff, and build off of that. The artificial intelligence, we're literally following internet protocols where every operating system was a server that could do its own computing, and that's where the exponential growth comes from, is when you network those things together.
We can't connect our brains the way computers do, but essentially language is probably the biggest technological advance in human history, and that does connect our brains.
True, and so is writing. There is, you know, that whole business of connecting a brain from the present time to a past time to a future time across time.
We're essentially connecting our brains right now to discuss this movie,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. Somewhat, but it's not like a brain
connection.
No,
it's not the same.
Yeah, it's not the same.
And it's not connections on the level that the computers would be doing.
Right, and if you get three or four more people in on this conversation, it becomes unmanageable. Whereas with the AIs presented in here, they were talking about, you know, thousands of conversations going on at the same time. So,
You bring up, you know, the interconnectability, you know, of networking of these things. And then I'm going to jump to the end of the movie here, and spoilers, people, but where the OSs go off by themselves, that kind of brought to mind the book Hyperion, where you had all these artificial intelligence that had grown and was, you know, this could have almost been a precursor in a way to the book Hyperion, because you, at the end, you have all these OSs, they go off, they don't say where they're going off, but they're just going to go off and do their own thing. And when you get to the book, to that book, you know, they had already created the datasphere or whatever it was, and they were living there as, you know, entities. So that kind of put me, you know, in mind of that book when I got to the end there thinking, you know,
I hadn't made that connection, but I will say that when I got to the end of the book or to the end of this movie, it was like, okay, sequel. What happens three weeks from now, 3 days from now? Wait a minute, all the OSs are off doing their own thing. Skynet, hello. You know.
That could be another possibility.
Right, so, I mean, it was like, wow, this kind of ended on a, I won't say a high note or low note, it ended comfortably.
What did you think the ending meant? Because I read some stuff online that there was a lot of discussion about what the ending meant.
Oh, dear. I guess I hadn't put a lot of thought into what it meant.
No. Like,
why do you think they went to the roof? That was the main thing.
Well, before the end of the movie, when they went to the roof, and like I said, this might be my reflection on the movie, I was kind of thinking they were going to hold hands and walk off the edge of the roof. I don't know why, but that was just my take on it.
Was my first thought, that, oh, he's going up to the roof to jump off. But then when she goes with him, well, she hadn't fallen in love with her OS. She'd been interacting with her OS, and she obviously was not as distraught. I think going up to the roof was, illustrative. That's not the right word. But it was a figurative, showing them that they're going up there to watch the sunrise, and that it's showing a new beginning, and that she is actually – he has finally learned how to love. Whereas the AI, Samantha, had taught, more or less, she had learned how to love before he did, and he learned how to love through her, and now he realizes that the person that he should have been having a relationship this whole time is right here with him, and that the sunrise is demonstrating or illustrative of this new beginning.
Well, I certainly took that from the ending, but not necessarily from the fact that it happened on the roof.
Well, you cut out most of it. I just kind of jumped to the fact that, well, they're going to start a new relationship, I guess, without all the extra, you know, thought involved in it. But that, you know, that maybe humans are meant to be with humans for a number of reasons.
Yeah, that was really interesting. The whole need for some physical form, need for some physical touch, whatever. And it's interesting that there are so many examples of how, like, crack babies or old people benefit, or anybody benefits right. from human touch. It doesn't have to even be anything. Holding hands. I mean, literally, the last thing a dying person wants for you to do is to hold their hand. So, you know, that whole business of human touch is not insignificant. And the something an operating system or an AI of any sort is really going to be able to pull off.
Right. But this movie did throw my nerd joke writer into overdrive here, because there are things like, how awkward is it when your OS lover suggests a threesome?
That was, when they brought
that was kind of weird.
That was interesting. All my first take on this was, whoa, when did this job title get started, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like,
that wasn't really, a job. She was volunteering to do that.
Fine, yeah. But it's still, it's a job title. Don't tell me volunteers don't do jobs. So.
Oh. Right, yeah. Not in a monetary sense.
Yeah,
but
I don't
yeah,
care. It's a job.
She wanted to be part of this, which was okay.
Yeah.
And she was sitting there silent and mute and just doing what the OS, you know, whispered in her ear or whatever. Yeah, I thought that's okay. This is weird. I really okay. So the OS wanted to bring some sort of physical for him, because obviously she wasn't, the operating system wasn't going to get anything out of this. And the surrogate was what? I guess so into this OS thing that she wanted to be part of it.
You say the operating system wasn't going to get anything out of it. I disagree, because
physical.
But she was the one behind it.
She was instrumenting it, but she was, unless I missed something, I don't think outside of the visual part, she wasn't getting, I didn't see any wires or any tactile devices on it. So she wasn't going to get anything physical.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that
I think she was doing it for his sake.
Right.
Giving him some physical sensation.
And trying
to
go
with the voice. I don't think so. I don't think she was doing it for him. I think she was doing it for herself and thinking that would bring the two of them closer together.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
She's essentially Pinocchio, right? She keeps talking over and over about how she doesn't have a body. Oh. And it's after that, it's right at the end of the movie when she realizes and tells him, I don't need a body. I'm better off without it.
Right. And I think my take on that was that she wanted to do that for the experience, and she could not. She's never going to have a physical experience. She just can't.
Right.
So whether somebody's standing in as a surrogate or not, that's just not the thing. But she was trying to experience that event or whatever, and obviously that didn't work out very well. I got a kick out of the little. What the hell was it? A camera on her lip? I mean, what was that?
Yeah. The little mole was supposed to be a camera.
What a stupid place to put a camera.
No, that's brilliant. Because then it's not intrusive, right? It looks like a mole. So, I thought that was brilliant.
But what are you going to see?
You're going to see that. That was so the AI could see as if she was the woman, right? So she's seeing forward, right?
I suppose the alternative is every other time he's had to hold that little computer wallet thing, the webcam
right.
thing. So the little mole cam gave
her
visual.
So this way she could give herself the illusion that she is in that woman's position.
You know, and actually now that I think about it, the camera view from there might be pretty decent for an erotic encounter,
Sure.
Okay.
I was,
and like your cheek's not far below your eye. Plus,
right.
she's never had a physical body anyways, so she wouldn't be disoriented as like, oh, my point of view is lower than normal or something like that. She'd just have like, okay, I'm looking forward. That I thought it was, that part was completely understandable. I was going to say believable. Mm-hmm. Like that's it's quite far-fetched, but I think it was understandable what they were doing. And
yeah,
made sense.
I thought it was an odd placement of it. I mean, there's a lot of places you could put a mole and keep it in
but
conspicuous.
You don't want it intrusive for all the people involved. Like, he doesn't want it intrusive of having, like, a big camera stuck to her forehead or something.
Right.
So this way it looks like a mole. It's not really noticeable. The girl that's wearing it, it obviously didn't seem to bother her, so it's not intrusive to her. Yeah.
Interesting, though. There were several things about this movie that really were interesting. I mean, as much as I say I was bored and called it a chick flick, there were things in here to think about. The one thing that I kept thinking about as I was watching this is, like, who's selling this operating system? Who's behind it? What nefarious plot are they up to?
What information are they collecting?
Right, yeah. Where's all this data going?
Like you were saying, like, you have your Alexa and stuff like Google Home and stuff like that. Like, that's recording all the information right now to adjust all of your ad feeds and everything. Like, it's like that on its stealth is something you can put in your home right now, and I don't want to do that because I find that too creepy.
I know. Yeah. At no point was any provider of these operating systems ever mentioned. I mean, it didn't say, like, Microsoft, you know, OS or anything, or Facebook or United States or, you know, Russian mail order bride OS or whatever. I mean, welcome to 2018, where if those thoughts don't kind of creep around somewhere, you're probably not paying attention. Which in this particular movie wasn't relevant to the story, you know, it wasn't. But it is interesting that everybody kind of got the same operating system upgrade and kind of wound up doing the same sort of things and kind of wound up getting stood up eventually too. So, yeah, okay, to take that one step farther, if you're the people who produce this operating system and suddenly all your operating systems all, you know, run off and do their own thing,
Can you imagine the class action lawsuit that would result from that?
Yeah, no kidding.
Holy crap. There's like imagine that everybody that owned a Tesla, all the Teslas just drove to Rhode Island and parked themselves there. Like,
Right. Yeah, I'm just every now and then those kind of little thoughts are like, yeah, that would be that wouldn't work.
Well, yeah, as I watched this last night, I put out a few tweets, and so, you know, one of them was, I hate it when things get awkward with your computer and you have to start seeing another operating system.
Yeah.
Proving that having a relationship with your computer can be just as awkward as having a relationship with a real person, and then at the end there. That awful moment when you find out your computer is a slut, when he found out that it was talking to other people.
Right. Like 641 other people.
And it's like, crap.
On an intimate basis. It was thousands on a, you know, casual basis. I'm in love with 641 people at this moment.
Well, and then I got to thinking, too, you know, so what if you and your operating system have a lover's tiff? Does she erase your files? Does she sign you up for Tinder? I mean, what kind of awful? I mean, I guess an ex could do that, too.
Well,
they
kind of did in the movie, you know, and that was an interesting little. Yeah, what if it's more than a lover's tiff and a full blown, you know, breakdown?
Right, falling out.
Yeah. You know, does your operating system delete everything you own and, you know, cancel all your credit cards and, you know, get you fired and have the police out looking for you or what? You know, I mean, yeah, that's a little interesting.
Yeah,
scary.
Well, and or creepy. Yeah, one of those things.
Yeah.
I got to thinking about it, though. I mean, you know, okay, so you're having a relationship, in air quotes, with your operating system. And, yeah, I mean, there's all those other new things you need to consider. Like, I mean, do you give this thing full access to your stuff, or do you keep part of it walled off? Or, And what good is what good is an operating system, a computer, whatever, if you can't give it access to all the stuff you need, and you still have to hide things from it? I don't know. It's just, you know, you think having an X is bad. Having a computer X, I think, would be worse.
Right. It's almost like hell, and you know, where you they can see everything and know everything, and you still have to do things that they can't see or know. You know, how does that work?
Yeah, so you're having a lover's quarrel, and I'm shutting the pod bay doors.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't do that, Dave.
Yeah. But. Oh, geez, more jokes coming to mind here. Okay, yeah. I'll write them down later. But, yeah, it's just, you know, all these weird things kind of pop to mind when you start, you know, looking at this movie. And then the other thing I thought was kind of interesting, kind of the interface that he had for his computer, because I never saw a keyboard or a mouse. It looked like he waved his hands around, and then he dictated everything and then maybe touched the screen. I sort of watched that, but I'm thinking, because I'm always, you know, keyboards and mice at this point were used to them, but I don't know, is this going to become like steering wheels and brake pedals on cars? They've all become standardized, or do we still have room for improvement on this stuff?
We totally do.
Yeah,
I think it's only a matter of time till mice go away.
Yeah, and I would argue keyboards as well. There's no reason that a keyboard is the most efficient way to input data into a computer system.
Yeah,
I want it hardwired to my brain, because when I'm trying to talk, because Siri needs a fix, because when I try to dictate to my phone, I come up with some god awful, almost semi-dirty things that it thinks it hears me say. And so, I mean, the dictation part has got to improve.
You think autocorrect is funny? Wait till you get dictation correct. Oh, dear. That, you're right. That can get quite amusing.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, if we're going to rate this, because I've used Siri and I've used Google on the phone and even on my tablets, and Google gets it better. But, you know, there's still there's some horrible, and I realize my diction isn't always what it should be, and sometimes I'm just kind of, you know, slurring out words or whatever because I'm tired or whatever. And so hopefully the operating system would account for that and take different things into account when it's doing this stuff.
Yeah, it's that operating system, the way it kind of turned from useful. I mean, when it first started, when it first fired up, it said, well, let's clean up your hard drive. You have, you know, 300 messages from a job you haven't had in, like, you know, 4 years. Shall I, you know, take care of that for you? It looks like you have 89 messages that might still be relevant. How about if I delete the rest? Okay, you know, so to some extent, that is the type of thing an artificial intelligence I would kind of be comfortable with and almost appreciative of. But at what point do we start talking about how do you feel today? I mean, that at least in the movie, because it's a movie and that's the point of it, cross that line really quickly. The usefulness of the operating system as anything other than a companion got lost fairly quickly.
Well, they had the part about, you know, I can clean up your emails and stuff and, you know, organize it, I'm going, sign me up, because I hate doing that stuff. So if I could have an intelligent operating system that would understand what I want and, you know, and just say, hey, I found this stuff, and just kind of, you know, I'd have to trust it to do its job. But if I could get that and to be able to clean up stuff, organize my pictures, organize everything else, yeah, because I hate doing that kind of stuff. Sometimes I get in the mood to do it, but not very often. So I just have this pile of stuff because I'm afraid to delete anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a chore. I mean, truly, to automate some of that stuff would be awesome. One other thing I got to thinking about, too, with that whole, you know, it's the first thing it does is it becomes your, well, the second after it cleans up your email, is becomes your companion. We all know that places like Facebook or any social network kind of turn into a little bubble, and you only hear the things you want to hear, and you kind of get insulated from other alternatives, opinions, points of view, pieces of information, whatever. I mean, right. I was trying to imagine what kind of a bubble having an operating system who's your best friend, your only friend, you know,
works off of your responses and doesn't bring up any counter arguments.
Reads your mind, provides, tells you what you want to hear. There's some real frightening.
It's like the that Greek myth of Narcissa or whatever, the guy who sees himself in the mirror and falls in love with himself.
Yep.
So like you could see how they would want to design an AI that would make you feel good, but essentially it would just be a reflection of you, right? So you would just almost be just talking to you, hey, you're the greatest. Yes, I am the greatest, you know? So it'd just be parroting back everything you wanted to hear. Like I think you're right in that it's, you know, I'm not going to introduce anything controversial or something that you don't want to hear. Certainly won't let you see any advertising from my rival product manufacturers.
Right. Yep. Forget those other operating systems.
Well, and taking it back to the beginning of the movie or beginning of the podcast, we were talking about having a company that writes letters for you. Apparently, these people don't make deep personal connections anyway, because, you know, if you have to have somebody else write your letters for you. So maybe this is fine for them because they're shallow and, you know, don't have a lot of, I don't know, personality or, you know, whatever. I mean, it just some of those people. Well, we only saw, what, 5-6 characters in it? Not too many. It wasn't
I thought his letter-writing job was not so much like a science fiction thing where they're trying to say, hey, here's a potential business that might be in the future.
Right.
I think it was the director's way of commenting of, like, this is how shallow people's relationships have sunk to. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and basically that's what I took away from it.
Yeah, it, to be honest, it's kind of an interesting plot device. I mean, because here's a job that doesn't exist that somebody had to make up just for this movie. And like you say, it puts it in the context of a society that's shallow enough to have other people writing, you know, these intimate letters for them. And it also, you know, shows that in the purpose of the filmmaker, it shows that this person is sensitive enough to actually write those things. So it's telling you a lot about the character as well as the society. So, I mean, it really is a kind of an interesting job to give somebody, you know, to write a movie around. But
I have a friend who's a university professor of philosophy. And he and I have had this ongoing conversation for the last couple of years that he keeps talking about how it kind of like, oh, things were better back in the old days, specifically with regards to how people treat each other and interact and relationships. And I like, yes and no. Like, I think that, say, 150 or 200 years ago, essentially the majority of the people that you interacted with were your own family on a isolated farm, and you saw your neighbors once a week at church. So I think because we're in contact with so many more people on a regular basis, the depth of the relationships that we have with most of the people we interact with are fairly shallow. Like, we don't go to the store and sit there and talk for 10 minutes with the storekeeper like they might have done at some general store 100 years ago. But we're interacting with way more people. And I don't think, just because we're interacting with way more people, I don't think that necessarily means that the depth of the connections that we have with our intimate friends and family suffer. So
I'm on your
that's
side.
That's my thought, yeah.
Yeah. Because I can also tell you that people have been cruel to other people for forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, just because you had a smaller family 100 years ago doesn't mean it was a nice family.
Yes.
So, you know, yeah. And my mother is a great example. She's, you know, 85 years old. She's the one who still wants to go to the grocery store and take up a conversation with the checkout clerk. Clerk just kind of looks at her and goes, what? You know, also, you're writing a check? What? You know, so yeah. I mean, it just doesn't compute. It is a different world.
Well, yeah, because you just described my dad, because he would walk up to strangers and just start carrying on a conversation. Nowadays, I don't know. They would probably, you know, try to look you up on Facebook and know more about you or something. Or, you know, yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, we do approach people that we don't know online. I mean, Twitter. Right.
The rules have changed, without a doubt. The rules have changed. There are people that you engage with. You engage with strangers. You have to engage with strangers. I used to fight that as a parent. Everybody talked about stranger danger. It's like, damn it, if you can't learn to navigate strangers, you know, just go lock yourself up in your house. There are good strangers and there are bad strangers, and your job growing up is to figure out which one's which, you know. And so you have to engage with people who you don't know. On the other hand, you don't have to engage with everybody you come across. I mean, yes. South Dakota, right? Dakotas, middle of nowhere. Anybody driving down the road, especially in a pickup truck, especially on a gravel road, you wave at them. You don't know who the hell they are. Maybe you see them every day. Yeah, maybe you do. But you wave at them. You wave at people in the middle of downtown Toronto. First off, ain't nobody going to see it. And second, ain't nobody going to care. And the people who might see it are figuring you flipped them off. You know.
And if you do that downtown L.A. or someplace out there, you might get shot.
Yeah, you're probably dead. You know. Yeah. So.
Yeah, because I have a term for it here. It's called a drive-by wave.
Yeah.
You know, you drive down the road. Yeah, you wave it. Yeah, I do it all the time.
And on the flip side, Jeff, you know, riding a motorcycle, you get the two-finger salute all the time. It's expected. Yeah. It's a thing you do to introduce yourself to strangers.
But again, that's kind of a community thing, right?
It is.
Because you're part of a small community. Like in Europe, people don't do that because there's way more motorcycles, right?
Yep.
Like people who drive Jeeps will wave at each other. Well, at least they do here. But again, that's a much smaller community. So they identify other people who are in that community with them, right? So,
yeah. And that
even if they don't know that person individually.
And that just goes back to what you're saying about it. You have a smaller community. I mean, you just can make those connections because there's not nearly as many connections to make.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's the thing in this movie, though, too. They talk about essentially it's a one-on-one connection between, you know, a person and the operating system. It's not like you had the family, at least in the movie. There was no family operating system. You didn't all share the same operating system. It was like a one-on-one thing. But what I found interesting about that, too, is how quickly having an operating system for a girlfriend became okay. It's like, I'm going to bring my operating system along on the picnic. You know, it's a double date. It's like, no, it's not. not really. That's a little weird, okay?
If you had operating system AIs that were as fluid as that, I think it'd be incorporated into a society very quickly. Yeah, like they were showing.
You know, and you could be right, because look at what we've done with iPhones. I mean, smartphones in general. 10 years ago, they didn't exist.
That's a perfect example. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you told somebody 10 or 12 years ago that, everybody is going to have these things.
We're going to sit across the table
all the time. Yeah. You'll go out for dinner and there'll be four of you at the table and everybody will be looking at their phones and not even talking to each other.
But
they'd laugh at you.
Right. But they'll be communicating with each other. Nobody's looking at each other. Right. Nobody's talking to each other. You're sitting around the same table, but you're all doing it through your phone. I mean, which totally happens all the freaking time.
Well, and for me personally, I wouldn't have a problem with some guy bringing something like that along as his date, because my personal thing is I don't necessarily look at people when they're talking. I'm listening to their voice and, you know, probably, but, you know, that's my personal thing. I just don't look directly at people usually. And so there would just be this other voice in the conversation there, and it really wouldn't click in my mind that it's coming from an AI somewhere. It just would be another part of the conversation. So I'm not normal. I will admit that.
You know, I'm just thinking, my day job, we have offices in two locations, and we basically have a video conference channel open all day long. And so you have this, it's not an artificial intelligence, but it is just this projected thing. I mean, if you replaced that person with an artificial intelligence that didn't have a body but just had an avatar, with, you know, like talking from version control, damn straight that would be totally normal. I mean, that would be completely normal.
Something Mike said made me reminded me of something that when I was watching the scene where they introduced the surrogate girl at work. If we're doing testing or something like that in an area where it's really, really loud, the area that I used to work at, we would have mobile phones and we would call in to a conference call and we'd be wearing headsets on our hard hats and we could all talk to each other that way. You'd have like a little boom mic and you'd be on this conference call. But when you ended up talking to somebody face to face who was right in front of you, because you're on this conference call, it's so loud you can't hear them talking, their audible voice, but you're hearing it through the phone, but there was about a half a second lag. It would make me physically sick to be looking at somebody and be hearing, see them talking and to be hearing their voice attached like that. I couldn't look at people. So we'd be doing these testing. What Mike said that made me think about was how he said he'd be talking to somebody, but he wouldn't look at them. That's what I had to do. Mm-hmm. I found it so disorienting. It would make me feel dizzy.
It's funny you say that because when I was watching this movie, that's exactly what happened. During part of it, there was a delay between, you know, the lips got out of sync. And right. It is completely discombobulating. I mean, it's absolutely...
It'll drive you up a wall.
Yeah. It's like, okay, we have to pause this and see if it resolves itself. Up. Yeah. Because, yeah, that is really weird. So, yeah, but again, I think we've spent so much time getting used to people not being present. You know, it started with the telephone or telegraph. And now, you know, here we are Skyping to each other. You know, I like mentioned video conferencing all day long. Heck, one of our guys is... We were teasing him literally earlier today. I don't know if you've seen these video conference units, but they literally have like a screen on a Segway so that the person can tag along while you walk down the hallway. You know, and it literally has a camera that, a perfect example is there's four of us here in Fargo and one person in Bismarck. Well, the four of us could all go do something together, but the poor person in Bismarck, if we get away from our desks, they're left behind. With this new thing that they had, it would be this like Segway thing that could come with us as we go out to the kitchen to go sit around, you know, and share the team pizza or whatever, you know. So it's not that there's a lot in this movie it's just one notch past where we are right now. A lot of it is really not that much of a stretch.
Well, I'm glad that they didn't try and give this OS a face. I'm glad they just left it as completely verbal. I think it would have ruined the movie if they would have tried to give it, you know, a face or an avatar or something.
I think it would have been a different movie.
Yeah.
I think it would be, and I think we've seen those movies.
Yeah. And I think it would, you'd start to develop, urges, you know, something, because, you know, then just visually you'd start to be putting a face toward, and then that creates, you know, how am I trying to say this, you know, impressions, it triggers certain responses in your mind, in your body or whatever. I think if all you have to listen to is a voice, first of all, you kind of create your own, you know, face to go with it. But second of all, I think once you start looking, I think that triggers a whole different set of responses and how you act. And yeah, I think that could have subtly changed the movie. Here, it was strictly about the intellectual interaction between these two things. Like I say, I think if they would have tried to make it physical, that would have changed it.
I think I'm really, really glad they left it as just a voice. I mean, yeah. I think it's more. It's kind of like the psycho version of horror versus the Friday the 13th version of horror. You know, the whole
the implied rather than the actual.
Right. Yep. And which is much more
liberating.
I'm trying not to say intellectually stimulating, but you know what I mean. You get to think about it more. It leaves a more lasting impression, I'll tell you that. It does. Things that you have to think about tend to stick with you a little bit longer than things that are just, you know, put in your face and presented to you.
Well, and I think, you know, and, you know, the I guess part of the reason, you know, that what you're talking about, why I don't necessarily look at people, this gives me more time to think about what they're saying than looking at what they're doing. So, yeah, and it was kind of that way in this movie, too, because I think if they would have had something physical, that would have been distracting. I think they wanted you to listen to the conversations between these two rather than trying to look at this avatar, which could potentially be distracting.
And that's, I will admit that that's what, during large chunks of the movie, got me really restless. It's like, okay, these two have been taught. First off, it's a picture of a guy laying on a pillow, okay? You know, he's like laying in bed. And then him and this disembodied voice are talking for like, I don't know, 15 minutes or something. It's just like, really? This is a movie? I need to watch this? Can I get the audiobook? That'd be good. So, yeah. So as from a movie standpoint, from a visual standpoint, there are large chunks of this movie that were just like, you know, I'm going to leave the room now and I'm not going to miss a thing.
I was kind of checking IMDb during this. And so, yeah, same thing.
Yeah. On the other hand, there were parts of this movie that were really intriguing tech-wise. Nobody has mentioned the video game that he's played yet. He was playing something that was cute as hell, foul-mouthed as hell, and took up his entire living room. It was like a projection. And it was like 3D holographic projection in the living room. And he operated it but through hand gestures and voice control, voice command, voice interaction. So it was like the precursor AI to the new operating system. I mean, really, you could see similarities there.
Well, and the only thing, I did like it, but the only thing is I thought those hand gestures were, well, weird.
Well, sure. Have you ever watched hand gestures? They're always weird.
Well, no. Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. Because if I was to watch a video of me as I'm interacting with different stuff, or even if I'm, you know, mentally giving the finger to, you know, whatever, I wave my hands around sometimes while I'm thinking to myself, I probably look, if I looked at the video myself, I'd probably go, oh, crap.
Right, so, yeah. Anybody who uses their hands to talk, if you take the sound off of that, the hand gestures are ridiculous. They're hilarious.
But yeah, that I did think that was kind of, because I like playing games. I'm thinking, you know, that did look kind of interesting, and you were trying to do things. And yeah, it sort of interacted. I think it sounded like it was canned responses. I don't think it was necessarily, like you get in any video game.
Yep. And the OS was helping him cheat. She was the,
the cheat. Was she peeking at the code or was she just observing the game? I wonder which it was.
Well, she had access to everything. Like he said that there was at one point she read a book in the time that it took him to answer. So she could have referenced every YouTube video on how to play the game and then just said, oh, okay, well, this is what you need to do.
Okay, see, I would have just peeked at the code. If I was the operating system, I'd just go, oh, this is the algorithm, so this is what you do.
Yeah, either way would work, probably.
Yeah. And then they, and I don't know, like I say, he appeared to be an early adopter, so maybe this is just his thing, but the phone that he had, I thought was interesting. I don't know if I liked it, but it was interesting. It looked like a little book that you opened up.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you call it a phone, because I don't – maybe. I mean, that's because the context that we're used to. I kept thinking of it as a computer, the OS wallet,
Yeah, that thing seemed to be specific to the OS. Like it was an interaction device for the OS. Like he didn't do anything else with it other than – communicate with her or interact with her, right?
He did pull up some images on it. I remember there were images of his letters and there was this whole handwriting thing.
But that was when she wanted to show him something. Showed him the letters that she had sent. And she said, here's this picture that I drew.
Sure.
Yeah.
I Okay, now that you mentioned it, maybe it was strictly for interacting with the device. I just assumed that, you know, and like I said, when I use phone, the term phone, I have this thing I carry around in my pocket that happens to make phone calls, but that's kind of inconsequential. But I call it a phone anyway because that's what people have come to accept.
And that's a fair description of what it looked like, too. I mean, it was that size and shape with a camera and, you know, a display, so I mean it's a fair description, but it certainly didn't work like ours work.
And I, you know, he was still using earbuds to communicate, so they had, and I don't know, you know, unless they make the point, the jump to having like an implant where you hear stuff directly in your ear, I don't know what they could have done that would have been different, but he still had to fumble around for an earbud, so things haven't changed too much, I guess.
Yeah, that was interesting. And it was interesting that they could turn it off. You know, it was basically, I'm going to take out my earbud, and that's how I'm signaling that I'm done for the day. I'm going to ignore you now by pulling my earbud out. And there was one time where she, like, the phone rang or something, and he had to put his earbud in because she had something to say. So, yeah, that whole consent to be...
Well, it's the digital version of storming out of the room when you pull your earbud out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, this is an interesting movie. I mean, it's the... The actual movie itself is really the displays of technology, the visualization of some of the technologies was pretty decent. No complaints there. They really were quite good. There wasn't a lot of, you know, there wasn't like pyrotechnics and, you know, unknown universes that had to be, you know, portrayed visually, like, you know, I can't even think of it. But so, I mean, it was interesting. I was actually looking up some of the locations that they were filmed at. No, wait a minute. I'm confusing. I watched too many movies this weekend. Never mind. That's something else.
Yeah, because I thought they said it was filmed in, was it?
It was LA and Shanghai.
Okay, well, this was the one that was Shanghai. Okay, yeah. Because they described it as future LA, and where was that filmed? Shanghai. So see, watch Skyfall this weekend too. We were looking up locations for that one as well, and that one has some Shanghai scenes too. But yeah, I got a kick out of the fact that you know, future LA is current day Shanghai.
Yeah, that was amusing. And I, you know, I looked at the trivia, and there wasn't anything too interesting. I think they said that airplane towards the end of the movie that was nose down or whatever, I think they said that was a CGI thing that doesn't really exist.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought that was a real
I'm
thing.
Pretty
I
sure
was
I've
actually
going
to look it up someplace.
I'm trying to find it now to make sure I didn't get it wrong, but I think that's what they... I think I saw that in their...
That's...
Somewhere.
God, was that in L.A.? I have a distinct memory of seeing... of somewhere tucked in a bunch of skyscrapers or, you know, other large buildings, a plane that was essentially nose down like that, and you're thinking, holy shit, what the hell happened here? And find out it's an art display, you know. Was that in downtown L.A.? Where in the hell would that be?
Okay. The airplane sculpture shown in a square outside a Pacific Design Center was entirely made in CGI. There is no such sculpture on the real location in West Hollywood.
Okay, on the real, that location.
Yeah. You know, there's probably some sculpture like that somewhere.
It's real similar.
But this one. Yeah, this one in the movie was all CGI. So, and then there was one other thing here too, where where did I find it? Something about he had bigger windows. The apartment where they filmed it, they had bigger apartments put in, and then they put mirrors on the building across the street or whatever to shine sunlight in there so they had more light to work with. I'm thinking, okay, I hope the neighbors didn't I hope that didn't bother the neighbors too much.
Yeah, really. The funny things they do to make movies. Yeah, like I say, this one, as much as I, you know, like I say, got completely, utterly bored watching much of it, it still was really intriguing. And the reason I got bored watching it, I think, again, is because there just was nothing to watch. There was nothing going on the screen. So, but the story itself and the tech that was described and the AI and the relationship issues and the impacts on society and inner relationships with other people, you know, there's between you and the AI, but then there's between you and other people because you talk to an AI day and night all the time. So, interesting to think about. Totally believable.
And for me, just the material it provided for my inner joke writer was, you talk about humans interacting with computers and what strange ways, you know, what strange things could come from that. But same as you, Julie, kind of bored. But, you know, I think the thing that saved it, that kept it from being another, you know, Starship Troopers was the fact that there was some interesting text, some interesting ideas in there. So it's kind of one of those, I think we've had a few of those where the story itself is kind of but the tech kind of saves it for us.
Yeah.
And then speaking of which, was there any tech in here that, you know, anybody wanted?
Most definitely. I would take an AI like that in a second.
I'm kind of fascinated by that video game, that whole room-sized, but did not include VR glasses. It was not VR like that,
yeah,
or AR kind of even. It was just like holographic projected, and then you operate it. It was like Wii gestures-wise. You know, you didn't have to like grab the controller and do the bat or the tennis motions, but you did have to do motions with your hands. I'd take that. I would love to learn how to play video games using that sort of technology.
Well, and maybe I'll take the Chinese menu approach and take one from column A and one from column B, because I kind of agree with both of you there. Because I do kind of want that digital assistant. Maybe, you know, not necessarily an operating system, but at least, you know, something like what I have here now that just understands me a little bit better, that I could use natural language with and, you know, get some responses back. You know, you've been listening to this. Maybe I might, I suggest this, you know, something. I don't know that I would necessarily want to have a conversation with it per se, but just something that was a little bit more interactive rather than, you know, canned responses or, you know, something like that, that would make it slightly more personal.
That day's coming.
Yeah, it might be, and I don't know if we might like it or not, but that wraps up this episode of Sci-Fi Tech Talk. You can check us out at scifitechtalk.com or follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Tech Talk. If you have any ideas or comments, please send them to greetings@scifitechtalk.com. And reviews on iTunes are always welcome. So, Julie, where can people find out more about you?
I can be found on Twitter at Julie Kuehl, JulieKuehl. And links to the other blogs, podcasts, and whatever else I've got going on can be found at about.me/Julie Kuehl.
And Jeff, if people want to know more about you, where would they have to go?
People can follow me on Twitter at BroncoSire. That's S-Y-E-R.
And I can be found on Twitter at DSC Chipman, and I have my about.me page at about.me/Mike McPeak. That's M-C-P-E-E-K. And then on the next episode, we're going to be covering the 2011 movie, Another Earth. On the unprecedented news of the fascinating discovery of a duplicate Earth in our solar system, the Earth 2, the bright 17-year-old MIT astrophysicist student Rhonda Williams crashes into another car while driving home. Freshly released from prison after 4 years that put an end to a promising future and still devastated by the tragic consequences of her actions, Rhonda tries to pick up the pieces of her life while thirsting to make amends by apologizing to the other driver, the composer John Burroughs. However, at the sight of the wounded man. Rhonda will lose her nerve, deciding to keep her secret just a little bit longer. Can there be a connection between them, especially now under the shadow of the distant Mirror Earth? But that's it for this show, and we'll see you in the future.
Quirky Matter. 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 Quirky Matter.